network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today, we will hear from Bob Welton of the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition about public hearings coming up about the Dunn Construction and Demolition Debris Landfill in Rensselaer in Rensselaer County. That's on Tuesday, August 6th. We will also hear some of last night's performance of Harry Nilsson's The Point by the Ukuleles Unleashed show live at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill on WGXC. And we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is Pamela Badilla, your neighbor from Data Data International Folkloric Theater, and you're listening to your radio station, WGXC, Acre, New York, hands-on community radio for Columbia and Greene County. Enjoy.
Wave Farms Art Park is now open on Saturdays. Drop in for unannounced guided tours on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m. or book a tour in advance on other days. Wave Farms' 29-acre campus in Acre is the home of the Art Park with 13 installations in the Study Center, WGXC Acre Studio, and Wave Farms International Artist Residency Program. Visitors on Saturdays receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free and tours typically last 60 to 90 minutes. Again, on Saturdays, Wave Farms Art Park is open for drop-in visits anytime from noon to 6 p.m. from June through October. Stop by Wave Farm on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Michael Alterman of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Wednesday, July 19th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that Greene County Administrator Sean Grodin is floating the idea of constructing a new $12 to $15 million building for the Greene County Mental Health Services Clinic. The current building was built in 1883 in Cairo. Grodin said, quote, "It's not falling over, it's not decrepit, but when a patient in a wheelchair or using a cane comes for an appointment, they need to go to use the ramp around the back of the building. Then they need to stay on the first floor because there is no way for them to get to the stairs," unquote. The building's air conditioning is 50 window units and is located in a 100-year floodplain. Greene County legislator Harry Lennon said the county is also considering a new site for the building and might move it to the parcel at Routes 23 and 32, which the county is touting as a new large development to bring businesses to the middle of the county. But unfortunately, that site has wetlands. Grodin said, quote, "Do you keep putting your finger in the dike to keep it operational? At some point, you've got to say it's time to move on," unquote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Brendan J. Lyon reports for the Times Union that on July 19th, the State Cannabis Control Board is expected to allow cannabis sales at fairs, festivals, concerts, and other events. New York legalized cannabis sales over 2 years ago, but the Cannabis Control Board has not been able to get many stores open throughout the state. So far, only 20 stores are open in New York. Locally, the nearest is in Rensselaer County. Growers, processors, and retail license holders would get a cut of the proceeds from event sales under the proposal. Dozens of farmers who received conditional licenses to grow the first cannabis crops for New York's retail market have been stuck with thousands of pounds of product because of the state's slow rollout of stores. Assemblyperson Donna A. Lupardo, chair of the Assembly's Committee on Agriculture, said, quote, "I am anxious to see what rules will need to be followed, hoping they are not too complicated or onerous," unquote, Lupardo said of the sales at the events. Quote, "I would urge the State Office of Cannabis Management to move as quickly as possible to help alleviate the cannabis oversupply problem and encourage the governor to greenlight the Tribal Nations Bill," unquote. If approved, it is unclear when cannabis sales at events will begin. Read more about this story in the Times Union. And Jamal Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that fire chiefs, assistant chiefs, and company line officers for the Hudson Fire Department no longer have to live within the city of Hudson. Hudson Fire Chief Sean Hoffman said, quote, "I'm redoing all of our policies and procedures for the fire department. Some of the things are outdated. The residency requirements are way outdated. What's happening is that half of our fire department doesn't live in the city of Hudson because of housing costs, no jobs, and other reasons. We had to make those changes and expand the mileage so the guys that don't live in Hudson can still be officers and chiefs for the future," unquote. Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson said, quote, "This is something that we have been looking at across the board, even with our police force. It just increases our chance of having a larger pool of potential candidates," unquote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, July 19th. Local early morning temperatures range from 61 degrees in Copake to 64 in Kinderhook. Regional average soil temperature is 72 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be medium and air quality will be moderate. And that's the only warning for today. No UV, no flooding, no storms, no rain. It is going to be sunny with increasing protective cloud cover in the afternoon. Winds will be light and a high temperature of 82 happens at 3 p.m. Though most of the afternoon will be spent above 80 degrees. Overnight, open those windows around 9 p.m. Let that cool air in all night. Those that are extra sensitive to particulates will need to judge if there is enough smoke to warrant the use of filtered air conditioning instead. We will see a low of 62, then tomorrow will be mostly dry, with a high of 84 happening at 3 p.m. Chances for rain show up near dark. 65 degrees overnight takes us into a rainy-looking Friday with a high of only 78. Saturday is looking mostly dry, chance of afternoon raindrops, and a high of 82. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 4:41 a.m., low tide at 11:35 a.m., high tide again at 5:22 p.m., and low tide once again at 11:29 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 76 degrees and the tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 8:14 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:33 a.m. Looking way up, we see an Hadouken strike has been modeled for tomorrow. G2 class storms and auroras could be produced. Plasma winds will be average today at 451 kilometers per second, with a thin density of 4 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 MHz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. There are no chances of aurora tonight. The current sunspot number is 142, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate, who just want to thank our incredibly attractive supporters out there. You know, the ones that are heading on over to WGXE.org, clicking that donate button. You guys are making the Better Weather even possible, so thank you again.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur. or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Democracy is facing unprecedented threats like we have not seen in more than a century. It is essential to demonstrate to Americans across the country who in Washington is fighting for them and who is fighting against democracy.
Senate Democrats have reintroduced the Freedom to Vote Act. The bill, first introduced in 2021, aims to place automatic voter registration systems in each state, provide grants for states to buy new and more secure voting systems, and bolster the Federal Election Commission's oversight and enforcement responsibilities. The move comes about a week after House Republicans introduced the American Confidence in Elections, or ACE Act. The compilation of bills aims to strengthen voter ID laws and prevent federal funds from going to states allowing non-citizens to vote. As some states gear up for upcoming votes, election workers are worried about their safety. A recent Brennan Center survey found 30% said they'd personally been harassed, abused, and threatened because of their work. In Washington state, Julie Wise, King County's Director of Elections, has worked in voting for 23 years, yet she's never experienced a political climate like this. She says some election workers are leaving their roles because of intimidation.
Members of our community. These are folks that you are in line with at the grocery store, picking up your children from school. And so it is an unnerving time to be an election administrator.
Congressional Republicans are infuriated by a letter saying former President Donald Trump is the target of Special Counsel Jack Smith's investigation in the January 6th attacks. Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy said it was part of what he called President Joe Biden's weaponization of the federal government against a chief political opponent. House Majority Leader Steve Scalise questioned the timing of the announcement, noting it will coincide with an IRS whistleblower testifying about Biden's business dealings.
You see, once again, this isn't the only time it's happened. Over and over again, you see different attacks by the Biden administration against President Trump.
Finally, lawmakers are garnering more support for the bipartisan Direct Capital Access Act, which would increase the number of flights out of Ronald Reagan National Airport by changing rules about how many flights can enter airspace so close to the Capitol. Some lawmakers oppose the bill because it'll lead to more delays. The House Rules Committee said based on an annual service volume, a 20-daily round-trip increase would up delays by around 26%, and a 25-daily round-trip increase would lead to a 33% rise in delays. Utah Republican Representative Burgess Owens feels opposing the measure is anti-consumer.
The 60-year-old status quo is anti-consumer. It's by its nature a monopoly that seeks to stifle competition and send a clear message back home to the American consumer. That message, we are determined to keep our choices low, which translates to you as keeping your flight tickets and our profits high.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Democracy advocates in Alabama are incredulous after an Alabama state legislative committee passed a new congressional voting district map on Monday, which again proposed only one majority black district. The Alabama Reflector reports that the state reapportionment committee approved the map without a previous hearing and without transparency on the factors used to create it. June 8th, the U.S. Supreme Court rejected the Alabama legislature's earlier map as violating Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. Alabama's population is 25.9% African American, yet only 1 in 7 of Alabama's congressional districts is majority black. The new map includes one district which is 51.6% black and another which is 42.5%, which the majority white committee calls an opportunity district. A map submitted to the U.S. Supreme Court during the Milligan case had two majority black districts, as did several of the 80 publicly submitted maps. Marina Jenkins, executive director of the National Redistricting Foundation, said in a statement, "The Alabama legislative Republicans have a choice to either continue with this atrocious pattern of voter disenfranchisement and to be challenged in court, or to finally pass a map that appropriately reflects the state's voters." The map will now be considered by Alabama House and Senate committees and will likely face further litigation if approved. We have links to articles and analysis at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Blowing helps me carry on. us home. Turn on your nightlight, baby, baby, I'm gone.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking today to Bob Welton, who is the treasurer of the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition. And over the last couple of years, we've certainly covered a lot of the problems with the done construction and demolition debris landfill located in the sense of Rensselaer, actually the largest such landfill in the state. And the Department of Environmental Conservation has a hearing coming up on Tuesday, August 8th. I believe one hearing in the afternoon, one later in the day. So, Bob, why don't you just give us a brief update? You know, what is going on with the Dunn landfill situation, and why is this hearing important?
Okay, so a little bit of history. Last June in 2022, there was what was called an environmental justice community meeting that was run by the Dunn landfill that was required by DEC. And so that had notices go to every resident within 1 square mile of the landfill so that they would know about the opportunity, because you know that Rensselaer is an environmental justice zone. It's also a disadvantaged community under the Climate Act. And so everybody got a notice. The meeting was recorded. There was a Zoom portion so people could participate remotely. And what happened is the mic setup was somehow wasn't right. And the people on Zoom could not get through. They could not hear anything. There were like two very brief comments that really made no difference. So all the people who tried to participate on Zoom could not do so. The recording was defective because of the mic setup, so you could only understand about half of what was heard from the recording. And the recording, one of the things that was supposed to happen, people were supposed to be able to, you know, tune in and listen to the recording and then make more written comments. Well, if you couldn't understand half of what was said, it was difficult. So anyway, we protested that and said something needs to be done about this because it's not fair to the people. They said, oh, there'll be a second community meeting. And so then the current announcement is it's not a what you would call an environmental justice meeting like the first one, because this one is being run by DEC. And they're not recording it. They're not allowing any remote participation. And as far as I understand it, they're not notifying every residence within 1 square mile. So I'm not quite sure. They bill it as environmental justice enhanced. I'm not sure that it is. I protested it, but, you know, they're going ahead with it. I just thought that it's not really environmental justice because the average person who's working in Rensselaer, half the time they don't see the news. They don't get any notices. They don't know what's going on. So unless you notify them specifically, a lot of people aren't going to know about it. So I think it's kind of unfair.
But now, I know over the years people complained about the odor, about the noise and vibrations from the truck traffic. Now, so the permit for this landfill, which many people argue should never have been awarded to begin with because it's so close to a school, that has expired. So this is part of the process of deciding whether or not to renew the permit. Yeah.
So what's going to happen is all that, you know, their people can email their comments in. They can go to the 2 hearings. All of that information will be considered. It's all going to be reviewed by DEC. And at one point, the permits, I guess, division in consultation with the council's office will decide what further steps need to be taken, if any. I mean, they could approve the permit. They could require more conditions to be met, or they can take it further, which I guess is what they call an adjudicative hearing. And at that hearing, there's an administrative law judge who really does make the decision. I think the administrative law judge this time is more like a meeting facilitator. So that's how it can go.
So, I mean, there have been complaints made about this facility for years now. Understand there have been, you know, some minor modifications.
Yes.
Are people satisfied that those modifications have been sufficient, or we just need to shut this down?
No. So I have to go back in history, too, because we did a lot of research on the original approval. And you mentioned the school location, which, you know, the landfill is only like a couple hundred yards away from the sports fields. And when you reviewed the original document that gave approval, the school was hardly an issue. It was like almost wiped off the map. You would hardly know it was there if you read the approval documents. And so that was never really dealt with. And also, so one of the other big issues is the trucks, because the C&D trucks, you know, they go right through the residential areas of Rensselaer, and they're noisy because they're going up these steep hills and going down steep hills. And the original approval used sand and gravel trucks, which are much smaller trucks, as the basis for getting the approval. The approval was given in 2012. And they used a 1993 noise study of sand and gravel trucks. So it had no bearing on what's actually happening today. So, you know, a lot of the stuff that should have been considered wasn't. The public did have input at the time, but those were all dismissed by the Dunn engineering firm, and DEC just accepted what they said. And so there's been no public input since 2012, because it was renewed in 2019 with like a rubber stamp. So because of environmental justice, this time people have a chance to do something about it and to say something.
Now, since there has been so much attention brought to this, and I understand the city of Rensselaer, at least one of the neighboring towns, have passed resolutions, you know, expressing their concerns about the operation. Is there any sense at this point that DEC is looking to, you know, either have a significant modification of the operation of the landfill or possibly shutting it down?
What they have done this time is they've required the landfill to provide a lot of information. There's been several what they call notices of incomplete application, and they've had to provide tons of information. So there's a lot of things that they consider. I don't know, you know, I have no crystal ball. I don't know what's going to happen. But we feel we still have more significant information that they should be paying attention to. One of the problems in this situation is, like, for example, the trucks, right? The trucks, in theory, could be, checked by the city, but the city doesn't do it. So then you could say, well, the landfill, the trucks are coming to the landfill because of the landfill, but the landfill says, oh, it's a municipality's responsibility to check that. Now the state can do it. The state police can stop trucks. They can inspect them. You know, they did that in 2018. They stopped about 37 trucks, and there were 107 violations on those trucks. That was a great sample, but there's been no real follow-up since then. So, if somebody's got to step up, and if DEC is a responsible party, they could be, make sure that trucks are inspected. If the city can't come to do it, then they should get the state police to do it, and they ought to be getting their reports on what's happening with those trucks.
So you only have about a minute left. I'm gonna,
okay.
So sort of the last question, people want more information, you know, what you guys have a website, and, you know, what is the location and time of this public hearing?
Okay, so it's the hearings are on August 8th at 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. at the Rensselaer City School. But you can also email or write to DEC so that I can give you the email, or I don't know if you have it, that you can put it on there. It's called climate.dunfacility.dec.ny.gov.
And your website, you got one?
Our website is stopdun.org, but you know, we're having a little, we lost the person who kept it up for us, so we're trying to get it back in shape, but, you know, we're working on it, so might not have all the current information on it.
Okay, well, want to thank very much Bob Welton of the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition. Hearings on Tuesday, August 8th, and this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Hey, I'm Spike Priggin, host of the Bedazzled Radio Hour. Broadcast every week from 12:10 until 2 p.m. Wednesday afternoon, live from Spike's Record Rack, 400 Main Street in the Village of Catskill. Every Wednesday, I play pop, rock, soul, country, blues, reggae, and other obscurities, and once in a while, a hit or two. Please check out the Bedazzled Radio Hour with Spike Priggin on WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA, every Wednesday from 12:10 until 2.
Next, we hear part of last night's broadcast live from the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, the Ukuleles Unleashed show. They covered Harry Nilsson's The Point album in front of a live audience on the radio at 90.7 FM, and here is some of that performance.
Well, welcome to the Bridge Street Theater. Here we are live, Ukuleles Unleashed. It's John Sturman with Karin Borgia, and we're on the stage of the Bridge Street Theater. We've got 15 different musicians playing, and you can hear them in the background. We're really happy to be bringing this to you tonight. We have a live audience. Let's hear it for the audience. Yay. Yeah, here we go. And tonight we're going to bring you a performance of The Point with narration and music and all that. And here's Jerry Lynn to tell us a little bit about Harry Nilsson. Jerry Lynn?
Hi. I always think it's a good thing to get a little background. I didn't know much about Harry Nilsson, so I looked him up and found a little facts here. 1971, he did The Point, and it was prompted by an LSD trip where he saw pointed trees. That's where it all started. He was born Harry Edward Nilsson III on June 15, 1941, in Brooklyn, but he moved to L.A. as a teenager to escape his family's poor financial situation. His father had abandoned his family when Harry was 3 years old. His mother's brother and sister, as well as his grandparents, were the cornerstone of his young life. He had an amazing aptitude and fascination for numbers and computers way back then. It's said that if you told him his birthday, he would be able to tell you what day that you were born, just like that. He worked as a computer programmer at a bank. He lied about his age, saying that he had graduated from high school, but he hadn't. But he was so good that they rehired him, even though they knew he was underage and had lied. The manager of the hangout that he used to go to gave him a, what do you think instrument he gave him?
A
ukulele. And that started him off. Then he learned how to play the guitar and the piano.
Yes, listen to it.
He did 19 albums in total, but not once did he perform in public. I mean, later on, he did a benefit. He sang one song with a bunch of other people, but never did he go out there on his own.
All the right words.
So a quote that I like from him is, "When I write my songs, I do them on many levels. There may be a message in them, and they may have a point to make. But the important thing, the first thing they should do is entertain. Before they put across their message, they should be good to listen to, pleasant on the ear." Most people don't want to have their ears pounded with messages. They just want to relax and listen to good sounds.
Well,
but the thing is that the messages are there if we want them. The songs just have to be taken on a different level. So, the point.
Thank you, Jerry Lynn. All right. All right, without further ado.
But also, I didn't know. You kind of got me nervous because you're like,
oh, orchestra of Catskill.
All right. Hello, everyone on WGXC land. I'd like to give you a brief description of what we got here. So we're on the stage. We've got about, let's see, myself. We have Eva on ukulele, going Bob on accordion. We have Bill on bass. We have three narrators. We have Dave, Nancy, and Allison. We have 8 ukulele ensemble members. So we've got a full house here. And the point, really the version of it that we're going to go ahead and do here is the version that I had heard on a CD that came out, I think, like in the 80s or 90s. And it's short and sweet. It's not even 40 minutes usually. And we're
going to
go ahead and get started here. So. Always the headphones.
This is the town, and these are the This is the town, and these are the people. That's the way they wanted it. That's the way it's going to stay. That's the way they wanted it. That's the way it's going to stay. Everything's got 'em. Everything needs one. Couldn't be without one. Everyone has one. This is the town, and these are the people. This is the town where the people all stay. This is the town where the people all have one. That's the way they want it. That's the way it's going to stay. That's the way they want it. That's the way it's going to stay.
Yay!
Years ago, there was a place called the Land of Point, and that was because everything in the Land of Point had one. The barns, the houses, the carts, everything, even the people. Everyone in the Land of Point had a point on the top of their head. Everyone, that is, with the exception of Oblio. Now, although Oblio was born to a set of normally pointed parents, and although he was born physically perfect in every other respect, he was born without a point. He was round-headed. And as time passed, Oblio became increasingly aware of his uniqueness, and so did everyone else, which made life in the Land of Point rather uncomfortable for him and his parents. You see, Oblio became sort of an involuntary celebrity, and he was subject to the sometimes cruel and unusual harassment from schoolmates. It wasn't easy being the only pointless person in the whole Land of Point. And in an effort to make life easier, his mother knitted a pointed cap for him to wear. It was to conceal his pointless condition. But it didn't do much good, because everyone knew he didn't have a point, so it only managed to make Oblio a little lonelier. In fact, the only real friend he had was his dog, Arrow.
Me and my arrow, straighter than narrow. Wherever we go, everyone knows it's me and my arrow.
Me and my arrow, taking the high road. Wherever we go, everyone knows it's me and my arrow.
And in the morning when I wake up, we may be gone. Well, I don't know. And if we make up just to break up, I'll carry on. Yes, I will. Straighter than narrow. Everyone knows, oh, everyone knows it's me and my arrow. Me and my arrow. Me and my arrow. Straighter than narrow. Wherever we go, if anyone knows, it's me and my arrow.
The national pastime in the Land of Point was a game called Triangle Toss. And Triangle Toss was a game for people with pointed heads. The object of the game was to toss a triangle as far as you could and then run to the opposite end of the field and catch it on the point of your head. But since Oblio had no point, he would throw a triangle, an arrow would jump up on his shoulders, and the two of them would run to the opposite end of the field, Arrow making the catch using the point on the top of his head. Now, most of the kids in the town thought it was all right for Oblio and Arrow to compete as a team. But there was this one kid who was the son of the evil count, who was the aide to the king, and the count's kid insisted that since Triangle Toss is a game for people with pointed heads, and Oblio obviously didn't fall into that category, he should not be allowed to play. Well, to settle the dispute, they decided to have a contest. Best 2 out of 3 tosses and catches. If Oblio won, he'd get to play. But if the count's kid won, Oblio wouldn't be allowed to play. And that brings us to the game.
End the page turn. Number two, dressed in blue, make a run with a Bowery Polly passing by. Then the rain starts to fall, making fools of them all, and so it ends in a technical tie.
At the end of the game, Oblio had beaten the Count's kid 2 out of 3. When the Count heard of his son's disgraceful defeat at the hands of this pointless Oblio, he was outraged, so he went to the king and reminded him of the law of the land, which is that all things and all people in the land of Point were to have one. And since Oblio didn't have one, he was in violation of that law, which called for his banishment. Now, the king, who was a good king, was painfully aware of his duty, which was to convene the tribunal, and upon the count's insistence, that's what he did. And when the tribunal reviewed the case, they could only arrive at one conclusion. Oblio had no point and was therefore guilty of being in violation of the law. So it was that he and Arrow... Oh, for Arrow was also found guilty of complicity. He was banished with Arrow from the land of Point to the pointless forest. The next day, Oblio's mother and father and all the townspeople gathered to bid a sad farewell to Oblio and Arrow. Now, everyone thought that banishment to the pointless forest was a bit excessive, but the law was the law, and the people were good, law-abiding citizens. And, well, it was the first time anything like this had happened in the land, and no one knew quite what else to do. So, Oblio and Arrow set off the pointless forest. That's the place where all things are pointless and nothing is pointed. And by the way, the distance between the land of Point and the pointless forest is directly proportional to the amount of time that it takes to sing a song.
sit beside the breakfast table, think about your troubles, pour yourself a cup of tea, and think about the bubbles. You can take the teardrops and drop them in a teacup and home to the riverside and throw them over the side to be swept by a current, to be taken to the ocean, to be eaten by some fishes. By some fishes who were swallowed by a whale who grew so old he decomposed. He died and left his body to the bottom of the ocean. Now everybody knows that when a body decomposes, the basic elements are given back to the ocean, and the sea does what it ought to, but soon there's salty water, 'cause it tastes just like a teardrop.
So they run it through a filter,
and it comes out from the faucet,
and it pours into a teapot,
which is just about to bubble. Now think about your trouble.
Finally, the two travelers reached what appeared to be the entrance to the pointless forest. There was a huge, thorny barrier with a small sign at its base, which read, "This way." Once on the other side of the barrier, Oblio and Arrow had their first encounter with the pointless man, or the pointed man, depending upon your point of view. You see, the pointless man did have a point. He had hundreds of them, all pointing in different directions. But, as he so quickly pointed out, a point in every direction is the same as no point at all. And speaking of points, I don't know if you've ever been to a pointless forest, but a forest is a forest. And one of the first things Oblio and Arrow noticed about the pointless forest was that all the leaves on all the trees had points. And all the trees had points. In fact, even the branches of all the trees pointed in different directions, which seemed a little strange for a pointless forest. When the pointed man disappeared, Oblio and Arrow were left standing alone, wondering what to do next, when suddenly they were aware of a strange sound coming in from the north. And when they looked up, there was a giant swarm of bees headed straight for them. So to seek cover, they jumped inside a hollow log. But when the bees attacked, the log was jarred loose, and it tumbled down a steep hill and careened and crashed finally into the base of a most unusual rock pile. In fact, the Rock Man. And the Rock Man said,
"See, what's happening with you boys? You look like you're pretty shook up. You've been goofing with the bees."
And Oblio told the Rock Man that he got banished and asked him whether or not this was the pointless forest. The Rock Man said,
"Say, babe, isn't nothing pointless about this game. The thing is, you see what you want to see, and you hear what you want to hear. You dig? Did you ever see Paris?"
"No."
"Did you ever see New Delhi?"
"No."
"Well, that's it. You see what you want to see, and you hear what you want to hear."
And with that, the Rock Man fell soundly asleep, leaving Oblio and Arrow once again all alone. So they continued on into the pointless forest, till suddenly Arrow, who had been running a few yards ahead of Oblio, disappeared into a hole, the point of no return.
down. To the bottom. Hello, is there anybody else here? It's cold, and I'm so lonely. Hello. And down here it's only nighttime. Ooh, all around me. Hello. Any hope for me? Unless this dream, which seems so real, is just a fantasy.